We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The Chicago Bears select.
Welcome to Picks for Polls, presented by The Bear Report. Your number one source for everything Chicago Bears draft news, analysis, scouting reports, and more. Presented by Blue Wire Pods. And now, making their way to the podium, Andrew Freeman and Usaid Koshal.
Welcome to Picks for Polls, a Chicago Bears draft podcast presented by The Bear Report and Blue Wire Pods. My name is Andrew Freeman, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Usaid Koshal. We're recording on Thursday, March 21st here with the start of March Madness going on. My bracket's already busted, by the way, with Kentucky losing tonight, Usaid. So that just sums up where I'm at headspace-wise here going into this thing. But before we get started, how are you doing today, man?
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm doing well. It's crazy, right? Because I was watching some of the Illinois-Moorhead State game today. So kind of started off not the way that you maybe would have wanted it to, but then ultimately you look at it, and yeah, Illinois rallied. Obviously, Kentucky, I guess, losing is not necessarily ideal for anyone's brackets, but I feel like, you know, with March Madness, you've kind of come to expect this every single year where there's the one quote-unquote traditional powerhouse that always gets ousted within like the first 3 days.
Well, this is what I get for not paying attention to college basketball as much anymore, because like 5 years ago, my brackets were much more sharper, much more in tune, because I was actually, you know, part of the sport, you know, taking a part of it, watching it a lot more. And now it's just like, I don't have the time to watch all these games going on. So just going into this thing blind and not helping me out the last couple of years. I have not had a lot of luck with my brackets, have not anticipated the upsets very well. Did not anticipate this one. Although this is what I get for trusting John Calipari coach teams in March Madness. But anyway, that's leaving that tangent behind though. Let's get to the subject of today's show. You know, we're going to be continuing our position breakdowns for the upcoming 2024 NFL draft. We did quarterbacks for our first position group, had a lot of fun discussing some of the top names in this year's draft. But now we're moving on to the wide receiver group, which is looking like another extremely strong group. I think we say this every year that this might be the best wide receiver draft in a long time. But seriously, this wide receiver draft, it's stacked. I mean, there are names at the top of this draft that would be, you know, multiple guys who'd be the number one wide receivers in multiple different years. You have depth in this class. You got a lot of variety of different skill sets in this class. Just a very exciting group of receivers.
Yeah, right. And exciting is the way to put it, because this is the NFL draft where I feel like if you are a team that has a young quarterback, or you're a team that's going to be taking a young quarterback, I mean, this is the draft to kind of go ahead and get some of those key building blocks, especially at that wide receiver position, for the next, I want to say, like 7 to 8 years. You know, it's that good of a class in terms of a lot of the top end talent. And then a lot of those guys in rounds 2 and 3, as well as tiers 2 and 3, there's just so much variety here. And then the big thing that I think sticks out with this class is just the amount of versatility that there is in terms of the positions that these guys can play.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that stings out the most is that, you know, we've had some drafts before where there are a lot of, like last year's draft, for instance, was a great draft if you wanted to get kind of that undersized slot guy, Z type of receiver mold of receiver, where there weren't a ton of truly like big bodied X receivers in that draft class, which, you know, that's where you see guys like Quentin Johnston, for instance, rise up draft boards because he's really the only bigger body receiver kind of getting buzz in that first round. And we saw how that's kind of worked out for the Chargers so far, where maybe they reached on him a little bit and he got overdrafted or overvalued a little bit because he's the only guy who has that skill set. Not really the case with this draft. You know, there's a lot of guys that fit a variety of different molds. You have, you know, small guys that can do well in the slot. You got speed guys in this draft. You got bigger body receivers in this draft as well. Not to mention, you know, a lot of guys who could do just a bit of everything. So it really is, if you're a team who's in need of any type of wide receiver, I mean, this is a really great draft to address that. Like you said, first round, obviously, but especially when you get into day two, like it's very tough to kind of put these guys in any order because there's like 15 to 20 guys I was considering putting in my top 10 list here, you said. And it really comes down to, I think, you know, scheme, the skill set you're looking for, the fit within your offense. And that's going to ultimately determine and really your stylistic preference for what you're looking for in these guys. So how this is going to break down today is that, you know, because there's so many names to get through, we're going to be doing, you know, our top 10 wide receivers in this draft each for us. I'm sure we're going to have some differences in the way we value these guys, which should be really fun to discuss. Then we're going to mention a couple of sleepers for us each and some guys that were maybe a little bit lower on compared to the consensus. So without further ado, you say, let's get into your top 10 list. Who is your number 10 guy in this class?
Yeah, so number 10 for me is going to be Devontae Walker from North Carolina. And again, you know, these North Carolina wide receivers are really intriguing to me because we've seen guys like Daz Newsome, Dyami Brown kind of go to the league over the last couple of years. And, you know, there's exceptions to every rule, but guys like Dyami Brown, you know, they never really end up being those incredibly solid high end number two receivers. They tend to be a lot of rotational guys, but you know, Devontae Walker is a really intriguing case study to me because you look at who he is in terms of his measurables. And again, you're talking about a guy that's about 6'2", just under 200 pounds. So has a bit of size to him. And then you all of a sudden get into his skill set in terms of what he's able to do. And you do see this guy who is going to be a threat in the vertical passing game, a player who's going to stretch the defense vertically, maybe even stretch them horizontally, depending on what type of offense he ends up in. And then you look at his long speed, it is just really impressive as well. And then who he is as a route runner, you do see a lot of the simple, basic, and kind of quick routes in terms of your slants, your outs, your posts, your digs, you know, those really pop up. And then he's got a variety of moves in his arsenal that really allow him to go ahead and showcase what he can be. So Devontae Walker to me is a guy where if I really had to sum him up, I would say that he's this dynamic electric playmaker, but also he's getting pushed down the board because this is a really good class. And the reality is that I would not be surprised that if he declared, let's just say last year, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind, we probably would have been talking about him as a surefire second round pick. But with this class, I see him kind of being that back of round two, top of round three type player.
Yeah, Tez Walker, he kind of reminds me a lot of Marquez Valdes-Scantling in a way, where he's kind of that tall, lengthy, speedy, deep threat. But, you know, it's really a 50-50 proposition whether he's going to have a chance of coming down with it because the hands consistency and the ball tracking is not the most consistent at this point. But, you know, if you're looking for that vertical receiver who can get down the field and make big plays for you, you know, he's a guy who kind of fits that mold really well. For my number 10 guy, I'm going kind of similar skill set here. Xavier Worthy out of Texas, who broke the record at the combine for the fastest 40-yard dash, a 4.21 40-yard dash. I mean, you're talking about speed. This guy's got blazing speed. Probably the fastest receiver in this draft class. And, you know, he's he's not a refined receiver, I think, but I think there is a little bit more, you know, he can do a little bit more than just being a deep threat. You know, he's got some yak ability to his game. He's got some wiggle to him, you know, after the catch. And even like when he's running routes as well. So he's not just a one trick pony in terms of being a deep threat. You know, he does have the ability to make guys miss and to break tackles after the catch and pick up yards and just be a big play threat there as well. You know, he's been a productive player for the Texas offense over the last 3 years, even despite the fact that, you know, his quarterback play has not been the most consistent. But he's someone to me where I think he's going to have a role in the league. Someone's going to get going to find a way to use him where I think his best way to use him is to get him on the move pre-snap, getting in motion, whether it's on screens and vertical concepts, you know, use that straight line speed that he has to your advantage there. He's not the most nuanced route runner. He doesn't have the most consistent hands. He's not a guy who's going to make contested catches. I think that's probably the biggest knock on him. You know, he had a 24% contested catch rate last year, which is just not great. He's not a guy who's going to, who's going to get open one-on-one against man-to-man coverage unless you're running vertical routes where he can use that speed. So he's someone who very scheme specific, I think, in terms of how he can be utilized. But if you're looking for a guy late second round, early third round, who could be that speed threat for you, that big play threat in your offense that defenses have to account for, Xavier Worthy is as good as it gets in this draft class. And it's not like he doesn't have the production to back it up as well. He's been a productive player as well. So for me, he's my number 10. And I'll just keep on going here with my number 9 and my number 8, because these two players are very similar for me in terms of their play style, because these guys are both kind of that bigger body receiver who have some deep threat. Well, not deep threat ability about them, but when you're looking at size, strength, speed, and that kind of profile, these guys kind of fit that mold as that contested catch guy on the outside. That's Xavier Leggett out of South Carolina and Keon Coleman out of Florida State. Those are my number 9 and number 8 respectively. With Xavier Leggett, I mean, this guy is an athletic freak. He ran a 4.39 40, I believe, at the combine for his 40-yard dash at 6'1", 223 pounds. Like, the dude's just a rocked-up tank of a dude who's got incredible straight-line speed. He's a good contested catch guy. He converted nearly 50% of his contested catch opportunities last year. The only thing with Xavier Leggett is that he is probably a pure projection at this point. You know, when you're looking at a guy who only 1 year of real production. He's going to be 23 years old to start his rookie year. So he's an older prospect. He's a late breakout. Typically those guys don't really translate well, but in terms of the traits that you're looking for at the wide receiver position, he's got all the physical traits that you could look for. And then Keon Coleman, didn't run a fast 40-yard dash, but I think he plays faster than he plays on the field. The big thing with him is that the separation ability is not great with Keon Coleman. He's not a guy who's going to have the most intricate routes. He's not going to separate very well at the top of his routes. You're really relying on him to be that contested catch guy for you on the outside. And for whatever reason, he kind of struggled with that in his college career as a contested catch guy. You know, he only converted 33% of his contested catch opportunities into receptions last year, which part of that is, quarterback play. Part of that is also maybe him not living up to that mold. So I kind of struggle with this type of wide receiver. This is the guy, these style of wide receivers who excel at making difficult catches in traffic and contested catches over people don't really translate well to the NFL historically because they struggle to separate. And that's the most important trait to have at the wide receiver position. But I think both of these guys have really good athletic tools to build around. And because of that, I take a chance on either of them in the second round.
And I am right there with you because I do have Keon Coleman along with Xavier Leggett ranked at 9 and 8 respectively. You know, Coleman's at 9 for me, Leggett is at 8. What really, sticks out to me about both of these guys is And again, if you follow along with my work on Bear Report all offseason, I've kind of been dropping more scouting reports than ever on a lot of the wide receivers. But I think, you know, you just kind of ultimately look at Keon Coleman and who he is as a player really pops up. You look at a guy who was productive at Michigan State, transferred to Florida State, ended up being productive there too. You do a little read on his background and, you know, he did track as well as basketball in high school. So again, a three-sport athlete. And I really have to say, for Keon Coleman, that basketball background pops up so much on film that you kind of see his identity as a football player is molded by the type of basketball player he was. Again, you're getting a guy that's 6'3", 213. You look at him and he does kind of continue to come down with those 50-50 balls, gets up there with those contested catches. And then ultimately you look at where he is in terms of a receiver. He's pretty good when it comes to the short and intermediate areas of the field. I wouldn't necessarily say Keon Coleman's a guy with burners that you can really trust in the vertical passing game, but he to me, if I really had to sum him up and, you know, make a sort of pro comparison, he's sort of like a better version of Equanimeous St. Brown, in the sense that you see the big bodied receiver that he is. You see that he's easily going to be an asset to a team inside the 20 yard line. And then you easily see that how he plays as a receiver is so similar to kind of like how centers and power forwards tend to box out when it comes to getting those rebounds in basketball. So Keon Coleman to me is a guy where, you know, he just lacks that speed and consistent separation element. And so as a result, you know, he is a guy that I would say is going to be a late round two, definitely round three pick. And then you get into Xavier Leggett. And again, you made a lot of really good points about him. You know, a guy that wins a lot off his sort of size, relies on it a lot. This big bodied, super strong receiver has some burners to him running that 4.3 40 yard dash. But I ultimately look at him and I say, you know, what's kind of is tough to look at when it comes to Xavier Leggett is number one, the production. And then you also kind of look at number two, you know, he just does not seem to have the vertical and he can't really go up and get it compared to some of the other top guys in this class. And I think that that kind of hurts him in a sense, because when you do talk about a guy that's as big and strong as he is, I mean, you have to be able to go up there and get the football. So looking at him, you know, Leggett's a guy where there's definitely some improvement for his route running as a wide receiver, along with his footwork, for him to kind of be able to, you know, figure out who he's going to be at the next level. And I will say this, you know, when you look at Leggett, when you look at Keon Coleman, the tough part about both of them is that they would have to fit into kind of this really specific style of offense at the next level that's going to maximize their skill sets, because I think the first year or so in the league, there are going to be those legit questions of who are you as a player? What's your role in the offense? You know, what do you bring to us in the long run beyond just being a rotational wide receiver?
Yeah, I mean, just relating it to the Bears, you know, specifically Shane Waldron coming over from the Seahawks. I mean, I could see both of these guys kind of fitting into the way that he utilized DK Metcalf over the last few years, as that, you know, big bodied X receiver from the outside where he's running go routes, he's running crossers, he's running deep digs, he's running slants. You know, he's running routes where, you know, comeback routes, you know, on occasion. Like, he's running routes where you're not really asking him to have to run the full route tree. You're asking him to run routes that he can utilize his straight line speed and his size and his contested catch ability to make plays down the field. I think if you put these two in that specific type of role, you could have a lot of success with them. It's just going to be a matter of, you know, are you going to be comfortable with some of the holes in their game and are you able to work around those deficiencies they have? And if you're able to do that, I mean, look, Keon Coleman especially, I mean, he's a human highlight reel at the wide receiver position. He makes some of the most ridiculous plays in this draft class in terms of the highlights. It's just the consistency, I think, and just the fact that he's going to be limited in terms of his usage. And if you're comfortable with that, I mean, you could have a really nice, productive player for you on your hands there. Again, both these guys getting day two grades from me. From there, Another second round guy I have going to my number seven guy, I have Roman Wilson out of Michigan as my number seven guy. And he brings a different skill set as these first three guys, where all three of those guys, look at Xavier Worthy being a true burner, you know, both Leggett and Coleman being outside receivers, big body guys on the outside who can run the vertical route tree. Roman Wilson is a true slot receiver in this year's draft. He's got good straight line speed. But to me, where he separates himself is that he's a very smart player in terms of knowing when to sit down in zones. He's got very consistent hands. He's got good straight line speed, like I just mentioned. He's not a guy who's going to get a ton of yards after the catch or break a ton of tackles and get you tough yards that way. But he doesn't drop the ball. He gets open against man coverage. He knows where to sit down against the zones, and he's just a very consistent football player. He blocks very well. He's a willing blocker. And you know, if you're looking for a slot receiver, Roman Wilson, he's not the best slot receiver in this draft class, and I'll get to that guy later on here. But for a day two second round value, it's tough to find a guy who will, you know, bring as much value as him, I think, because to me, he just seems like a guy who's going to come into the league. He's not going to be the most flashy player, but he's just going to be very productive for, you know, an 8 to 10 year career in the NFL as that slot receiver, which is extremely valuable for teams that want to air it out in the passing game.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, and I really like Roman Wilson. In fact, I would say this, that when you look at a lot of the playmakers that Michigan's sending to the draft this year in terms of guys like Wilson, Mike Stanstrill, you know, Donovan Edwards, I believe, too, along with Blake Corum. I mean, it's very clear to me this is probably one of the better Michigan draft classes that we've seen over the last couple of years. But ultimately, you know, looking at a guy like Roman Wilson, I mean, he certainly fits the buck here in terms of what teams are looking for at the next level. You talk about the blazing speed that he has. You look at a guy who is going to stretch teams vertically as well as horizontally. And then really his role at the next level is going to be that F receiver, you know, being in the slot. You could also make the argument that he could technically play the Z, but then again, that's going to be when offensive coordinators really want to get incredibly creative with him. You look at who Roman Wilson is in terms of a pass catcher. Yeah, really, I think good hands there too. And so he's to me the ultimate package. And again, he's a guy where, you know, he's just going to continue to get better with time. Now for me, you know, I look at him and I actually have him ranked as my number seven guy as well, just because the tough part for me when it comes to, you know, ranking these guys in the top 10 is that you're not really sure, well, where's the cutoff between a guy that is going to be a first versus, let's just say, a second round pick, right? And then Roman Wilson's one of those where with an incredibly strong pro day along with top 30 visits, I could certainly see him bolting into the first half of the second round and possibly even, if he blows the doors off some of these teams, being a target for a team at 31 or 32, for example, really the back end of round one.
Yeah, for me, after I get to my number seven guy, there's a tier jump here where I'm getting into receivers who have first round consideration for me. I view them as late first round prospects. And that's going to start with my number six and number five. I'll just point them out here in order because both of these guys are very similar in terms of their skill set and in terms of their flaws in their game. And that's going to start with Donnie Mitchell out of Texas at number six and Brian Thomas Jr. out of LSU as my number five receiver. Both of these guys are 6'4 dudes who are 21 years old, you know, about 200 pounds. And both these guys are just tall, great athletes who are going to be really useful in the vertical game. And for me, I mean, Brian Thomas, the speed he has, the size speed combo that he has is very rare. I think he ran a 4.33 40 at the 40 yard dash at the combine. A guy who just, you look at him and the way he played at LSU this past year, there's a ton of tools to work with here, ton of tools. You know, he's somebody who very good with his contested catches, you know, didn't drop a ton of balls last year. Again, not like the biggest yak guy in the world, but in terms of deep threat ability, the ability to make tough contested catches, like he feasted off of slot fades that they ran LSU's offense last year. And I could see him having that type of role once again, you know, coming into the NFL, or maybe use him as that big slot and you can run those, you know, vertical concepts with him there. Otherwise, he's a guy you can develop as an outside receiver. Now, you know, the thing for him is that, you know, he's not the most experienced in terms of, you know, his route running ability. You know, he's not somebody who is very nuanced with his routes right now, but he's a smooth mover. So if you can develop him, there are a ton of traits to work off of here. And the same goes for Adonai Mitchell, who has every trait you could look for from a wide receiver prospect. You know, he's tall, he's big. He's got great explosiveness. He's got exceptional speed. He's very quick and agile for a guy of his size. The thing with Mitchell is, you know, he's very inconsistent. And, you know, you watch him, and I always, when I watch him, there's always a part of me that wants to see more, you know, from him when I watch him play. I think he's got early first round ability, but his tape is more of a day two receiver. And it's just kind of like finding, you know, meeting in the middle there between the upside that he has and where he is as a player right now. Like there, he had that quote at the combine when he was getting interviewed where he mentioned that, you know, he doesn't really run his routes at full speed. He kind of goes half speed with most of his routes. And you can see that on film where, you know, if he's not getting the ball, he's not really going out there 100%, you know, and selling things. And I don't know how that's going to play for a lot of coaches in the locker room, because, you know, the coaches they want in the NFL, their guys really at any level, but they want their guys going 100% every single time. And you know, the fact that Mitchell's already admitting that, you know, that's not really his style that he's done so far, you know, that's going to have to be something that gets coached into him, at the next level. And look, I think he's got good yak ability when it's there. He's got good jump ball ability when it's there. Again, it's just a matter of finding the consistency in his game. And I think if you can find that, and you can coach some of that things out of him, the sky's the limit for his potential. He's a guy that could really be a true number one, I think, in the NFL if everything works out for him. There's also a scenario where he doesn't work out whatsoever, and you're lighting a first-round pick on fire, I think, with him. So there's a wide range of possibilities with both these wide receivers. I think Brian Thomas, for how as raw as he is, I think he's a little bit safer than A.D. Mitchell. So it's kind of tough to pick apart the, you know, the differences between the two. Ultimately, Brian Thomas, because of his athletic profile, and you know, because of his lack of experience, I think there's a lot of room to grow there where he's, you know, getting better. A.D. Mitchell, I do question the lack of consistency though. So that's where I'm at with my number six and five guy right here.
Yeah, for six and five, you know, I am kind of tied with you at the hip there, and for slightly different reasons. Now, Brian Thomas Jr. to me is this incredibly polarizing prospect. And again, he's polarizing because you look at the talent that LSU has sent at the wide receiver position over the last couple of years to the NFL, and there is kind of this, I want to say, sense of polarization that takes place, right? So you have your Justin Jeffersons and your Jamar Chases, but then really when you look at a lot of the lesser known LSU guys, like a Terrace Marshall, for example, who I believe was drafted in 2020 by Carolina, that is where the massive fall off happens. Now it's interesting because in this draft, what we've seen is a lot of the attention go to Malik Nabers, again from LSU. Brian Thomas Jr. is kind of opposite in that sense, depending on who you talk to. Because on one hand, you look at Brian Thomas Jr. and there is absolutely a lot to love, from the frame that he has to who he is as a route runner. You know, you talk about a big guy who's going to be your kind of typical X, but also your Z receiver at the next level. Well, he could technically play Z, but he's really impressive in terms of the size, the speed, the athleticism. And then you kind of go ahead and look at who he is as a route runner, pretty solid there. And yes, he can separate, but the reality, what's missing for me from Brian Thomas Jr.'s game is there's not necessarily the physicality there that you would like to see from a guy of his level. I also think that when it comes to kind of those wide receiver moves, I mean, he's got to be able to do something more than just a dip and rip or a rocker step, which, I mean, if we're doing a film breakdown, I would go ahead and explain. And so, again, Brian Thomas Jr. is just a guy that I look at and I say he hasn't really played fully up to his potential over the last couple of years at LSU. And then you get into Adonai Mitchell. And A.D. Mitchell to me is, again, just incredibly polarizing as well, because I look at him and I say, well, what exactly is the true ceiling for him, right? Pre-combine, I think there was kind of the debate of which of the Texas receivers between Xavier Worthy or A.D. Mitchell's really good. I would say this is that A.D. Mitchell's kind of shown us that he is a pretty solid route runner. He's got pretty good ball skills. You look at him and you say, okay, you know, he's able to change direction with ease, so he's going to be able to affect defenses horizontally but also vertically. And he knows and understands how to utilize the field space in front of him when getting open, right? So there's a massive sense of spatial awareness and really good footwork too. But I also think that when I look at him, where he needs to improve is a lot of the fundamental things that you need from a wide receiver. You're looking at just a lot of route running. You're looking how to go about restacking versus press coverage, for example. So again, A.D. Mitchell's just the guy where he should technically be a round one pick, but I don't think he's as high as a lot of people are rating him. I mean, I know he's going to end up being a round one pick because some team in the back half of round one from 25 to 32 is going to take a chance on him. But again, the question is going to be, is he really going to live up to the expectations that are set for him?
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, I think both of them, you kind of summed it up. Both of these guys are very polarizing in terms of, you know, the low end of their projection is kind of scary. The high end, though, if you can maximize their ability, I mean, you can get a number one wide receiver here. And that's kind of the big thing here that you're shooting for. You know, are you looking for, you know, a solid floor, or are you looking for that ceiling? And a lot of NFL teams, they're going to chase that ceiling and, you know, bet that their coaching staff can get these guys to maximize their abilities. But, you know, going to my number four guy, this guy's a true first-round talent for me. I know that he hasn't gotten a ton of first round buzz and is kind of considered more of a day two guy at this point. But to me, like, Ladd McConkey out of Georgia, man, he's a different flavor compared to the other receivers that we talked about with Thomas and Mitchell. But McConkey, he just screams productive NFL wide receiver for the next decade. Like, he's the best slot receiver in this draft class for me. He's probably the best route runner in the draft. And he just knows how to get open. He's a threat after the catch. I mean, he had in his last year at Georgia, 3.26 yards per route run, which is among the highest in this draft class. He's just filthy against man coverage. He gets yards after the catch. And he was the focal point over the last 3 years for Georgia's passing game alongside Brock Bowers. But he was really that 1A, 1B in that passing game for Georgia. And he knows how to get open. He's got consistent hands. He doesn't really drop the ball. And he just knows how to play the position at a very high level. And he's athletic enough to where, again, everyone is going to stereotype him to that, old school Patriots, undersized, scrappy white guy slot receiver that Tom Brady got the most out of with the Wes Welkers and the Julian Edelmans and Danny Amendolas. I think he's got more athletic juice than those guys, though. I think we're looking at the wrong comparison here. I think he compares much more to, guys, like Deontay Johnson, Calvin Ridley, guys who have the ability to play on the outside, but those fluid route runners who just know how to get open, can play outside, can play in the slot. Can McConkey just be a slot guy for you and be dominant in that role? Yes, but I do think he has enough speed and juice to play on the outside as well. I think he's just a very safe wide receiver prospect. He may not have the highest upside in this class because he doesn't have quite, the freakish athleticism and size profile and contested catch ability that some of these other receivers do in this class, but he just knows how to get open. He gets the yards after the catch. He blocks very well for his size. I just don't really have a ton of questions about McConkey translating to the next level. To me, he's a first round talent. And I think if he goes to like a team like Kansas City or Buffalo, where he can pair with a great quarterback to match his talent, I mean, watch out for him in that situation. Or even like if he goes as high as like 18 to the Bengals, since they're moving on from Tyler Boyd and they need a replacement for T. Higgins down the line. Like, I can see a scenario there where he's matched with Joe Burrow. I mean, he could absolutely eat in those situations there.
Yeah, and Ladd McConkey to me is hands down, I want to say personally, one of my favorite receivers to kind of watch. You start to look at what he did in the Senior Bowl back in January down Mobile. Again, incredibly productive week for him there. And then you look at everything that he's done over the last couple of years, and it's no doubt in my mind that the NFL has been waiting for this young man. You're right. He's going to be compared to Wes Welker and Danny Amendola and all those guys, but he is way more than that. I mean, I actually think that he takes things to another gear, and this may be a bit of a polarizing comparison for some, but to me, I mean, if I'm going to be fully honest, right, Ladd McConkey is who everybody thought Hunter Renfrow was going to be at the next level. I mean, that's genuinely how good I think Ladd McConkey is. Again, really solid route runner, can be physical too, will go ahead and play in the slot, really good footwork, and just has so much spatial awareness, understands how to go about manipulating linebackers along with defensive backs. So to me, I look at Ladd McConkey and I say, he's going to be a guy that is going to be a really good building block for a team for at least, I want to say, 8 to 10 seasons.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be a number one in the NFL, but I think as a high-end number two who just gets open, McConkey, I feel very comfortable in that role for him at the next level. And for me, that's an easy first round grade. But getting to the top three here, and let's talk about the big three, because there are, I would say three receivers in this draft class who I think in any year would be the bona fide number one guy in most classes, guys who project to be number one wide receivers in the NFL someday. If they hit their potential, and for me at number three, that first one is Rome Odunze out of Washington. And I think he's kind of a tier below the next two guys that we're going to be talking about here. I do have some concerns about Odunze in terms of his upside, because he doesn't, in terms of just comparing him to some of the top guys in this draft class. Now, he's not the greatest separator in the world. He's not the fleetest of foot. Even though, like, he makes up for that for the fact that he's 6'3", 215 pounds. Like, he's got that X receiver alpha size, and that reflected in his contested catch ability. He had the highest contested catch rate last year of any of these wide receivers. You know, he converted 75% of his contested catch opportunities, which is just insane. So you throw up a ball to him, you know, in 50-50 situations, it's not 50-50. It's 60-40, it's 70-30. Whenever you throw a jump ball in his area, he can run all the vertical route tree because he's got good straight line speed. He's got good nuance to his routes. And with that size that he has, as long as you throw an accurate ball to him, you know, he has the ability to go over the shoulder and track that. He has the ability to go up high and go up and get it on those vertical routes down the field, on back shoulders and on, you know, just vertical go balls where you just, hey, just it's you one-on-one against a corner, go up and get it. Like, he's great on those types of concepts. And like I said before, you know, despite the fact that he's not the, you know, the quickest guy in the world, he does have some solid nuances to his routes as well. Now, he doesn't separate as well as the other top two guys, and that's probably what dings him a little bit for me. But if you're looking for a guy who can be that reliable X receiver for you, you know, I would say, I'm not saying he's going to be, you know, Larry Fitzgerald, but he does have a lot of Larry Fitzgerald in this game. Where you look at Larry Fitzgerald, he wasn't like a burner in his prime for the Cardinals. He wasn't a guy who, you know, absolutely mesmerized you with his, you know, quickness and his athleticism, but the size that he had, you know, the ability to make tough catches, the physicality that he played with, Rome Odunze brings all those qualities to his game. And I mean, there's a reason why, you know, that Michael Penix Jr. was able to have the success he did the last couple of years, because Rome Odunze just makes it so much easier for him. And he's a quarterback's best friend in that way, because you can just throw up a contested ball to him, he's going to come down and get it. And again, like I said, there's more nuance to his game. He does have the ability to separate. He's just not a master of it compared to some of the other top guys in this class. But to me, he's got all the makings of number one wide receiver. I think in most drafts, he'd be the top wide receiver. Unfortunately, because it's so loaded for him this year, he's number three for me. But I can see a world where a lot of teams have him as number two in this draft class as well, depending on what they value.
Yeah, Rome Odunze to me is a guy, his game I really go ahead and love. And I look at Rome Odunze and I kind of say why he makes so much sense for a team like the Bears at ninth overall, simply because you look at him and kind of you go ahead and you start to say, okay, well, he is sort of like your DK Metcalf, right? Again, just a massive, big-bodied wide receiver. Not a guy who's ever going to blow you away with his speed, but he's going to be a guy that's going to figure out a way to get open. Not necessarily the greatest separator on the planet either, but again, a guy who, because he has that massive frame, he's able to win a lot of those 50-50 balls with a high level of ease. And it's like you said, you know, they're not 50-50. It's sort of like a 60-40, 70-30 type deal when it comes to Rome Odunze. Now, I look at Rome Odunze and I say that with the way NFL teams are getting versatile when it comes to utilizing these wide receivers, I mean, Rome Odunze is a guy that I look at and I kind of go ahead and say, okay, you could put him way outside the numbers. You can also go ahead and move him inside the slot as well. It's kind of where, you know, he's lined up in sort of that like performance split, you know, split between the farthest receiver on the outside, but then also the tight end. He also just, I think, is going to provide a number of mismatches when it comes to trotting him out from the slot, in terms of when you get a team that lines up in a trips formation, let's say in a 3x1 or a 3x2, you're gonna probably have Rome Odunze on the front side of that play most likely, or because of how good he is in terms of the contested catches, you're gonna tell him, hey, we're lining up in a 3x1 or 3x2, just, you're on the back side of the play, just go up and get this football. So Rome Odunze, at a first glance, you look at him and you say, okay, you know, there's a lot of really good stuff to like, but the separation kind of holds him back. But then again, when you start plugging him into specific offensive formations, that's when you say, okay, there's a lot more to work with here than we probably give him credit for.
Yeah, and that gets us to the top two guys who – really excited for these two, because to me, there's a tier gap between Odunze and the next two. And, I mean, take your pick, man. These two are, they, these, might be the best two wide receivers we've had prospect wise in a decade here. And that starts with me with Malik Nabers at two and Marvin Harrison Jr. at number one. Starting with Malik Nabers, I think he has the highest upside in this draft at the wide receiver position. I do think he's got some things to work on, though. You know, playing at LSU, he didn't play in the most, you know, well-rounded offense where they asked him to run the full route tree. So it's going to take him probably a year or two to kind of adjust to the NFL in terms of working on his craft and being, you know, that precise route runner that you want. But man, if you're looking just for guys who just run differently than everybody, like he has that Tyreek Hill element to his game where he just moves at a different speed than everyone on the football field. And whether it's straight line speed, whether it's with his quickness, his explosiveness, his change of direction, his ability to accelerate and get the top speed, like there aren't many guys in the NFL who really in on planet Earth in general who move like Malik Nabers with the level of explosiveness that he has. He's a deep threat at all three levels. You can run him in the slot, you can run him on the outside, you get him in motion. He can be dangerous there. He's a great yards after the catch guy because he is so shifty. He is so creative with the ball in his hands. He's got that, you know, acceleration to get the top speed. And then, he's a better contested catch guy than he gets credit for as well. And he's not the biggest wide receiver in the world, but I mean, it's 6 feet, 200 pounds. It's not like he's a small receiver either. And you know, he's been compared to DJ Moore a lot because of kind of, you know, that element of his game where he's a threat at all three levels. He's a great yards after the catch guy. He's a deep threat. He's got pretty consistent hands. I think that's a very good comparison for him. You know, right away, I can see a lot of DJ Moore comparisons for him. You know, maybe he's not quite Tyreek Hill in terms of his speed and athleticism overall, but he's maybe just a tick below that. Like he is just, man, he's got the goods. He's got the goods. And he's an incredibly fun player to watch. And he's going to be a dynamic playmaker in the NFL right away. Even if he, you know, needs some time to work on, you know, developing his routes and developing the full route tree, like a creative offensive coordinator is going to find a way just to get the ball in his hands. And he's going to make a ton of plays his rookie year, just based off of his athleticism alone. So he is a special prospect, like comparing him even to like LSU prospects of years past, like Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, for instance, those are two big guys. To come into the NFL over the last 5 years, like Ja'Marr Chase was probably considered the better prospect of the two between him and Justin Jefferson. We know that Justin Jefferson's probably been the better pro of the two, but Malik Nabers is a prospect. Like if he's not right up there, he might be a little bit better than both of these guys as prospects, man. I really like Malik Nabers' game. Like it was a true toss up between him and Marvin Harrison Jr. for my number one. The reason why I'm going with Marvin Harrison Jr. as my number one is that I think from day one, he's got the ability to be a top 10 receiver in the NFL right away, just because he's so pro ready. He's got all the release packages. He's got the route running ability. He's got the size. He's got the contested catch ability. He's got, you know, pretty good speed for his size as well. He's got the hands. He's got the ball tracking. Like he's got everything you can look for right here. Plus he's the son of a Hall of Fame wide receiver, right? Which, you know, doesn't always translate, you know, necessarily for having those bloodlines, but you can just see, you know, the way he plays the game that he just understands how to play the position. So I don't think he has quite the upside that Nabers does because Nabers has more game-breaking athleticism. But Marvin Harrison Jr., he's going to enter the league right away as the number one wide receiver in the NFL. He's probably going to be a top 10 to 15 guy his rookie year. And I can see him being, you know, sooner rather than later, being a top five receiver in the game just because he's the full package. I mean, there's not a ton to analyze with him because he's just so good at everything. And he kind of, you know, he didn't benefit really well from his quarterback play over the last couple of years, kind of hurting him a little bit in terms of his production. But even then, he still produced. Like this past year, even then, he still produced despite the fact that he doesn't have CJ Stroud throwing him the ball his second year. You know, getting significant playing time. And I don't know, he's just the guy, man. And it's almost like you had to look for, you know, holes in his game just to kind of downgrade him because he's so good at every single part of playing the wide receiver position. It's almost like, you know, the only reason why maybe people have him maybe lower than some of the other guys in this class because of prospect fatigue. But to me, again, I think it's pretty close between him and Neighbors, but he's number one. He's a special prospect. He might be the best prospect in this class, regardless of position. And there's not enough high praise I have for Marvin Harrison Jr. this year.
I mean, you're right. I think, you know, most consensus for a lot of people seems to be it's Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Neighbors, and then Real Mudunze. Now, I look at Marvin Harrison Jr. as a prospect, as my number one guy, and I say, yes, absolutely, you're getting the complete package. Again, you're getting a guy who, if you had to create kind of the perfect wide receiver, it would probably end up being something similar to Marvin Harrison Jr. Again, he's a good guy that, you know, again, isn't explosive or isn't incredibly explosive, doesn't necessarily have burners by any means, but still figures out a way to get done because his toolbox contains a variety of wide receiver moves. He is able to go ahead and stack versus coverage and then also restack against some of those more physical defensive backs. A really solid route runner. Again, those NFL bloodlines with his dad run so deep to the point where when you watch Marvin Harrison Jr., I mean, it's very clear that he has really put a lot of time, effort, energy, and craft into his game. And, you know, he's been on the NFL's radar for the last two seasons, 22 along with 23. I mean, it's to a point where, you know, I remember back during the 2022 college season, there were a lot of Bears fans basically saying, hey, you know, we need to grab Marvin Harrison Jr. at number one overall in 2024. But, you know, you start to look at Malik Neighbors too, and it's interesting because Malik Neighbors and Jamar Chase were actually kind of the same height coming out of college. Not that they've grown, but, you know, they are somewhat in a sense the exact same size. Now I look at Malik Neighbors and I say Jamar Chase coming out of LSU alongside Justin Jefferson, you kind of got the vibe that those guys were going to be an X or a Z at the next level. I look at Malik Neighbors and I say he can play like the other two, X, Z, or F, but his true fit might be at the Z or the F position. He could also play X if needed. And you look at him where he's at, and again, you're talking about a really good route runner, insanely athletic, just a high level of explosiveness, and then can basically run any route on the standard route tree. He also understands how to kind of go ahead and manipulate man versus zone coverage, going ahead and creating and then just continuing to gain leverage against defensive backs. And I looking at a lot of these wide receivers, I mean, it's one thing that's very clear to me, you know, at LSU, they tend to train their wide receivers to basically have a variety of wide receiver moves, right? Depending on what type of routes you're running. So basically they teach them to stack once again and restack. They teach them to go ahead and create leverage. You know, there's Malik Neighbors is a guy when he runs those posts and those corner routes, he likes to use the rocker step move a lot, which is pretty much he's going to fake that he's going one direction, freeze the DB for a second, and then go ahead and just kick it right back outside. So it's very similar to what Antonio Brown used to do when he was with the Pittsburgh Steelers before he created the crazy social media company. But that's just who Malik Neighbors is as a prospect. So you're getting kind of an MHJ and Malik Neighbors, sort of the complete wide receiver prospect. But I think what puts Marvin ahead of Malik for me is Marvin has proven time and time again, like I can pretty much do anything that, you know, any receiver's ever done.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? Ew, seriously. They squeeze the grease out of the wool and process it with chemicals, and then you eat it. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I got rid of products I didn't want anywhere near my body. I found that many multivitamins contain high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and even lacked some of the nutrients we actually needed. So what did I do? At 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. Ritual's products are made traceable, meaning we share the science and sourcing for every single ingredient. For example, our vegan vitamin D3 comes from sustainably harvested lichen in Nottingham, England, not sheep. We trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. See for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's the full package. He really is. And, you know, he's probably a lock to go top five, I would say. You know, it's either Arizona or the Chargers for me is where he's going. I am interested to see how the rest of this wide receiver draft plays out in terms of where these top guys go, because I can see a world where Roman Dunsay is the second guy off the board. I can see a world where Malik Nabers is the second guy off the board. You know, either way, if one of those guys is available for the Bears at number nine, I get the Bears need more draft picks, but man, you're not passing up on these guys. These are really dang good wide receivers. If you want to set up Caleb Williams to succeed, you want to have one of these three guys on your roster. And I'm not expecting Harrison to be available, but if Nabers or Dunze is available, you run the pick in. It's really that simple. And it doesn't take a ton of analysis to kind of make that point. I mean, a lot of Bears fans are going to make that point that the Bears need to still add at wide receiver. Could you imagine a wide receiver room with DJ Moore, Keenan Allen, Roman Dunze, or Malik Nabers as your third option at the wide receiver position with Cole Kmet and Gerald Everett at tight end with DeAndre Swift out of the backfield? Like, what an embarrassment of riches for a young quarterback to enter the league in, right? So we've talked about the top guys in this draft class. We have a little bit of time left here just to touch on maybe a couple sleepers and some overhyped prospects. Let's go to our overhyped prospect real quick. Just one guy that we're maybe a little bit lower on compared to the consensus. You say, who's that guy for you?
I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. That is a very kind of tough question to answer, especially in what is this incredibly deep, you know, wide receiver class, right? But I mean, I'll be honest with you, you know, to me, one guy that I think does tend to get a little bit more love as a early day three prospect, but I don't necessarily see it, is going to be Texas A&M's Anais Smith, right? Anais Smith, I guess is how you say the name. But you know, he to me is, again, you're talking about a guy that's around 5'9", 5'10", about 190 pounds, you know, and everyone loves to look at, oh, well, look how versatile he is playing any receiver position. Look at how he's able to go ahead and, you know, pick up an insane amount of yards after the catch. Look at how he's able to go ahead and, you know, manipulate defenders in space and just constantly make them miss. But then you also kind of look at it and you say, well, what exactly is his role at the next level? What exactly is he going to go ahead and be for a team? Is he going to be kind of your prototypical slot receiver, or is he going to end up basically being another version of Velus Jones Jr., where you try to use him as a gadget player, but if you don't know how to use those types of players in offenses, you're probably not going to get, you know, the most out of him. And then you look at some of the injury history too, and there is a high level of concern. So I ultimately look at Smith and I say, you know, he should probably be like a late fourth, early fifth or sixth round pick, but he's going to end up going much higher than a lot of people anticipate.
Yeah, for me, my overhyped or just overvalued prospect is Brendan Rice out of USC. You know, another son of a former Hall of Fame wide receiver, Jerry Rice's kid, who Jerry Rice, the greatest wide receiver of all time. Unfortunately, I just like, with Brendan Rice, I mean, he just doesn't have, I think, the ability. He's being projected as a day two pick for a lot of mock drafts I'm seeing out there. I see him as like a mid to late day three guy. He doesn't have the juice. He relies on contested catches, like I said before, and he's not particularly efficient with a contested catch. He had 25% contested catch rate this past year. He's got consistent hands. He's a smart receiver, obviously, you know, watching his dad play for a long time. Like, obviously he's picked up on some things, but he lacks the physical tools, I think, to be successful at the next level. Again, he's going to win with size and physicality. Those types of receivers don't really translate well to the next level, in my opinion. So to me, he's a guy who gets kind of overhyped and overvalued because of his last name. I think if he had any last name other than Rice, he'd probably be a day three, you know, pick that we don't really talk about as often. And you can tell, like, his last year at USC with Caleb Williams as his number one wide receiver, Like, yeah, Caleb Williams had to force feed him a lot of balls because he didn't really have a ton of option in that passing game. But having him as his number one wide receiver did make things a lot more difficult for Caleb in his last year at USC because he just didn't have the ability to separate and get open against man-to-man coverage and make things easier for Caleb in the passing game. But we talked about, you know, our overhyped guys. Who's kind of your underhyped or sleeper in this draft class that isn't getting talked about enough?
Yeah, so, you know, just getting a chance to network with a hell of a lot of people this offseason, I would definitely say I've gotten kind of a lot more into some of these smaller school prospects that exist. And so to me, you know, it's a wide receiver from, and it's hard to find film on him, by the way, so I had to go largely off of highlight tapes, but Leodetric Griffin from Mississippi State, I look at him and I say, okay, you know, very much a smaller receiver. Again, I don't even think he ever even received a combine invite, but just a guy who is probably going to end up being an undrafted wide receiver anyway because, you know, of the level of competition that he's played against. But again, you're looking at guys like 5'10", 190 pounds, you know, on somewhat of the smaller side, has a smaller catch radius too. But you're getting this guy who's this basically insane kind of operator from the slot, right? He's a really good route runner, has kind of blazing speed to him, so he offers you a bit of that value on offense alongside special teams. And then when it comes to elusiveness, looseness at the hips along with the change of direction, I mean, that's where Griffin is one of the best in this draft class, I would say. And I'll even go as far as to say this, I mean, if he went to, even if it was a lower end D1 school, he'd be talked about a lot more, and he'd be the type of player where a lot of people look at him and say, okay, he's definitely a building block on offense. So again, a guy from very much a way smaller school, but something there in the toolbox to keep an eye on is a guy who could make a big career for himself.
Yeah, for me, my sleeper in this draft is Malik Washington out of Virginia. A guy who's a late breakout. I mean, he's had some productive years. You know, he started at Northwestern, but got his chance at Virginia this past year to really be a number one guy. And I mean, he broke out. He had 111 receptions this past year, 1,384 yards, 9 touchdowns, 3.15 yards per route run. He led the NCAA in missed tackles force with 35 missed tackles force. So a guy who's just really effective after the catch and making that first guy miss. And he's a pure slot receiver. You know, I think the reason why he's not really being talked about is that he lacks size. He's 5'8", 194 pounds, but extremely quick. He's got pretty good contact balance for the fact that he's kind of an undersized guy. But to me, he's got a lot of dynamic ability to him. I think as a day three pick, and when we talk about some other guys who kind of fit that mold in this draft class, whether it's Jacob Coing, Malachi Corley, you know, Ricky Pearsall out of Florida, who kind of has a similar sort of play style as being that slot receiver in this year's draft. All those guys are good prospects. Well, I'm not taking anything away from them, but I don't see the difference between those guys as much and a guy like Malik Washington, to where those guys are projected as early day two, second, you know, early third round guys. And Malik Washington is kind of seen as a fourth or fifth round guy. I think they're a little bit closer than, you know, maybe some mock drafts or, you know, some scouts may have them as out there. And I think he's got the ability to be a productive player. Like he had a ridiculous year this last year. He was one of the most highest graded receivers in this draft class, according to PFF. Really good against man-to-man coverage, runs good routes, and you know he converted nearly 65% of his contested catches this past year. So he plays bigger than his size, I think. And that's kind of the big thing for him is, yes, the size is going to be an issue for some guys, but if you can play bigger than your size, that's going to bode well for you at the next level to at least translate a little bit. You know, we've seen guys in the past that have been undersized and have had productive NFL careers. I don't think it's like it was 10 years ago where you need to have a baseline of size to be successful at the NFL. We're seeing more and more where these small undersized guys are coming in right away and are being productive players. Tank Dell is the latest example last year as a third round pick. Where, yeah, he was really undersized. You know, he was small, he was skinny, not the longest guy, but he knows how to get open. He knows how to run good routes. He's explosive. He's got good speed. I see a lot of the same traits in Malik Washington. So as a day three flyer, I really like him as kind of a guy who can be a slot guy for you, can be a return specialist for you if you want, and kind of play some roles in that mold for you right there. But with that said, ending on a high note here, that's going to do it for us here, kind of breaking down this wide receiver class. And there are a ton of other names that we haven't even gotten to yet. I mean, it's such a loaded class that we weren't going to touch on everybody. But those are some of the big names to kind of watch out for as we move along to the process here. The draft is about a month away here. So really exciting class, really fun to break these guys down. And from there, I mean, we just have a lot more to dig into with these position previews. But with that said, make sure to like and subscribe if you are dig the podcast here and dig what we do here at the Bear Report and Picks for Polls. Make sure to follow us on social media as well. You can follow us on Twitter at Picks for Polls. You can follow the Bear Report at Bear Report on Twitter. You say, where can our listeners find you on social media and find your work?
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram at Usaid Koshal. I'm dropping a lot of stuff on the Bear Report YouTube channel, so you're definitely going to want to have notifications on for that. And then check back with the website. You know, there's over the last week or so, I think I've dropped, you know, 6 or 7 different scouting reports. So more analysis on a lot of the wide receivers that we discussed today.
Yeah, and as for me, you can find me on social media at AJFreeman25 on Twitter. You can find my work on the Bear Report as well. And also make sure to check out the Bear Report YouTube channel. I am planning on getting some mock drafts up out there this next upcoming week. So make sure to check that out. Always fun to do those type of mock drafts deals. So with that said, that's going to do us for us here tonight. For all of our listeners out there, have yourself a great rest of your day, and bear down.